I have a dream. I know it's been done before, but stay with me if you will. I have a dream. A dream of a world without global terrorism, where men and women can wake up every morning in the knowledge that they are safe, whether working in New York City or catching the tube in London or going to school in Beslan, secure in the knowledge that someone has rid the world of terror. I have a dream of a world free from poverty, a world where it's no longer true that 30,000 people every day die from poverty-related causes, where we no longer see the harrowing sight on television of little African boys and girls dying of starvation. I have a dream of a world where our streets are safe, where riots in a world capital are no longer happen and are never to be repeated. I have a dream of a world where there is no more sickness, where I'm no longer asked to visit someone who's just been diagnosed with cancer, or pray with someone with only hours to live, or comfort the parents of a newborn baby with meningitis, all of which I've had to do in these last months. I have a dream of a world no longer hit by natural disasters, where nations are not devastated by hurricanes or earthquakes or tsunamis. And I have a dream of a world where there is no more death, where the doctor never says, "I've got some terrible news for you," where there are no more tragic accidents cutting short promising young lives. I have a dream of a perfect, secure, beautiful, pure world of everlasting life, a world free from death and mourning and crying and pain. Do you ever dream that dream? Well, let's escape from a dreamland this lunchtime. Look, you're busy people. I don't want to take up your precious lunchtime taking you into a world of fantasy. Let's face it, human history is littered with those who've gone before me dreaming of a better world. Some have given their lives to their dream and worked tirelessly for their utopia. Thomas More, Karl Marx, Martin Luther King, they and so many have dreamt a dream, but no one's made it a reality. But listen, my dream is not a hopeless pie in the sky, vague fantasy, castle in the air, pipe dream kind of dream, because it's not my dream at all. Now, the dream I've been describing is what the Bible says will one day be reality. Yeah, it's here in the Bible book of Revelation and chapter 21 that Jago read for us just a moment ago. And it promises a world where God will, do you look at line 4, if you will, the little number 4, where God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, where there'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. Here is the world that all Christians are waiting for. It is a completely new world, not just a patching up of this tired, tottering world that we live in, but a completely new world order where sickness and suffering have been eradicated, where evil has been exterminated, a world where people will live forever, a world where there is no more death, and so there is no more mourning or crying, and isn't it the world we all want, deep down? It's an eternal world, not a temporary one. Let me ask you a question, if I may. Play along with me. What would you do if you had your life all over again? Now, you know, some of you have hardly started on life, but those of us who are over 40, what would you do if you had your life all over again? I often ask people that question, and, you know, they're singularly unimaginative. Some people say to me, "I wouldn't change a thing." I'm not quite sure why they say that. Maybe they're just sort of thinking that they've got to present themselves as, you know, sort of successful. "I wouldn't change anything." Well, I think that is singularly unimaginative. There's so much more to do in this world, isn't there? If I had my life all over again, I'd have loved to have played tennis at Wimbledon, on the centre court with an adoring British public cheering me on. "Come on, Paul!" Never mind Tiger Tim, what about Pussycat Paul, you know? Or to be a Formula One racing driver, enjoying the thrill of the speed and the glamour of the lifestyle. I'd have loved to have done that. If I had my time all over again, I'd have loved to have learned to play the piano as Craig plays it and fly an aeroplane, not all at the same time, you understand. And there are parts of the world I'd love to visit. Oh, we've seen a bit of the world, but don't you look at some parts of us, I'd love to go there, you know, Niagara Falls and the Grand Canyon and Ayers Rock and so many other places. Wouldn't you like to visit all those places? But life is so brief. It seems to be gone in a moment. So even if we do pack tons into our short lives, and I know many people that do seem to pack so much into their lives, but even if we do that, and I don't think I've particularly done that, but even if we do that, there's still so much more that we'd like to do. So many more experiences we can have, places we could visit. people to get to know. The good news is, when I look at the new creation, here in Revelation chapter 21, when I look at what's to come as a Christian, I will be able to do all those things and more. See, look at how this new world is described in line 1. The Apostle John says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away." A new heaven and a new earth. It will be a place just like this world. It is a new earth. And yet it's oh so different because it is new, with all the old bits and all the bad bits removed. And it is a new earth, so it's a material world. Rid yourselves, if you will, of all thoughts of disembodied spirits and airy, fairy, angelic beings twanging harps and floating on clouds and spending eternity in an ethereal negligee. Forget all that. That's not what the Christian looks forward to. That's not for the future for the Christian at all. I can't bear the thought of spending forever in an ethereal negligee. And I don't want you to think about me being in an ethereal negligee either. Just don't think. Forget that thought for a moment. It'll ruin your lunch. No, you see, it is a new earth, very much like this one, but with all the bad bits removed. A new earth with, I imagine, mountains and snow and skiing and waterfalls and tennis. And what a place to spend eternity. It's a vibrant place. At the centre of this new earth is a city. Do you see it there in line 2? I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. And the rest of it, the rest of this chapter that we haven't printed out for you, describes this place as unimaginably beautiful and full of variety, incorporating all the best and greatest aspects of all the nations in the world. And it'll be totally secure. Can you imagine never having a worry in the world and never feeling alone? Do you remember Freddie Mercury? A lead singer with the rock band Queen, died a few years ago, of course, now. He said this just before his death. "You can have everything in the world and still be the loneliest man. And that is the most bitter type of loneliness." But not in this new city. You will have everything, but not be lonely, because this is a great place of community. And at the centre of this new creation, everyone, we're told, will be united to the living God. Look at line 3. "And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them.'" Have you got a picture of the new creation? Isn't it the world that we all want and long for deep down? I had a great afternoon the week before last. It was such a simple afternoon. Nothing spectacular about it, but it was wonderful. I took my son to the park, little Joshua, 2.5-year-old Joshua. The sun was shining. Haven't we had some great weather in these last few months? Amazing, isn't it? October and even into November. Well, it was October then, and I didn't even have to wear a coat, and the sun was shining, and Joshua was having a whale of a time in the park. And as I sat there watching him without, it seemed, a worry in the world, I thought to myself, I wish this moment could go on forever. Have you had those moments? Grab hold of that feeling and then know that in the new creation it will go on forever. Aren't you thirsty for that world? Look what the living God says in line 6. "He said to me," says John, "'It is done. I'm the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To him who is thirsty, I will give to drink without cost from the spring of the water of life.'" Jesus can quench our thirst for that world. He will quench our thirst in that new world. Because you see, we were made for an eternal living new creation, not this temporary decaying world order. And how will this world ever come about? Well, let's be sure the new creation is not going to be realised through a political manifesto or a business plan or a popular uprising. Only God can bring about the world of Revelation chapter 21. Because to have this new world means wrapping up this old world. It means, line 5, making everything new. This week, as we head towards Remembrance Sunday, we should realise that we human beings can't do that, not in this world. Now, the great hope of over our world near 150 years ago now was that the world was heading into a bright new future. Listen to the optimism of Prince Albert opening the Crystal Palace exhibition in the middle of the 19th century. He said this: "No one who's paid any attention to our present era will doubt for a moment that we are living at a period of most wonderful transition, which moves rapidly to accomplish that great end to which indeed all history points, the realisation of the unity of mankind." Can you hear the optimism? As Prince Albert said, we're coming into that era when finally, as human beings, we're going to be united And what happened a few years later? World War One, when tens of thousands lost their lives. So terrible, it was called the war to end all wars. But what happened a few years after that? After the war to end all wars, the Second World War, where Churchill said this: "If we can stand up to Hitler, all Europe may be free, and the life of the world may move forward into broad sunlit uplands." Well, they did rid Europe of Hitler, and we thank God that they did. But the broad sunlit uplands have been darkened again and again by the shadows of the monsters that inhabit this world. There have been so many false dawns. So why should I believe that this one will come true? Well, very simply, because the one who promises it has already given us a sneak preview of it. See, when Jesus Christ walked planet Earth 2,000 years ago, he gave us little glimpses of this new creation. Just think about the astonishing things Jesus did. If you know anything of your Bible, then do you remember when he was in a fishing boat with a storm raging, with his followers who were there in the boat with him, convinced that they were going to die? They thought it was curtains for them. And he stood up in the boat and he said to the wind and the waves, "Be still." And instantly the storm died down. In that moment, Jesus showed that he had the power over nature and over this world order. And then when Jesus encountered a man who was demon-possessed, a man that no one could help and no one could contain, Jesus delivered him, leaving him peaceful and in his right mind. You see, when Jesus came to this earth, he was able to banish evil. Now, when Jesus met a woman who was ill, with no hope of a cure, a woman who was socially isolated and in extreme physical pain, Jesus healed her with just a touch. He changed everything for her. Jesus was able to stop suffering. And when he was told of a little girl who died, indeed, the funeral had already begun, Jesus took the little girl, the little dead girl, by the hand, and he told her to get up, and he brought her back to life. When Jesus entered a situation, the mourning and the crying stopped. You see, when Jesus came to planet Earth, nature was controlled, evil was banished, suffering was stopped, and in the presence of Jesus, death was defeated, and so mourning and crying ceased. Sounds a lot like Revelation chapter 21 and line 4. Will you look at it again? "He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain." That's where our confidence comes from. When Jesus walked this earth, he was doing that sort of thing again and again and again. And so you see, it's as if as Jesus walked planet Earth, it's as if a curtain was pulled back and we were allowed to have a little glimpse of this new creation that he promises will come one day. He gave us just a little sneak preview of it. And that is why I'm confident of this dream becoming a reality. But let me ask you this lunchtime, what do you think of all this? And what do you make of Jesus? Can he really deliver? Who do you think he is? See, for the Christian, the future's bright as we look to this new creation, but yeah, there is a twist in the tale. The last line of Revelation 21, which we haven't printed out and maybe should have done, but let me read it for you. It's quite devastating. It's verse 27 of Revelation 21. "Nothing impure will ever enter it, this new creation, nor will anyone who does what is shameful or deceitful, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life." Nothing impure will ever enter this new world. Well, of course not. Or it would be ruined, and it would no longer be the perfect world that we long for. Of course, nothing impure will enter the new creation. And so you and I have a problem. We long for this world that Jesus has for us. But if nothing impure will ever enter it, then what hope is there for you and I ever to enter it? For who of us with hand on heart can really say, "I've never done any wrong. I've never done anything that's impure or shameful or deceitful or disgraceful or appalling or dirty"? None of us can make that claim. We're all sinful, as the Bible puts it. But again, you don't have to be Christian to believe that. The atheist Bertrand Russell admitted, "It is in our hearts that the evil lies, and it is from our hearts that it must be plucked. But how can we get rid of it? Have you ever tried to turn over a new leaf? New Year's resolution, I have. Can you keep it up? No." And then listen to Carl Jung, the psychologist, again, not a Christian. He said, "It is becoming more and more obvious that it is not starvation not microbes, not cancer, but man himself, who is mankind's greatest danger. And so you and I have a problem. We long for this new creation, but we're not pure enough to enter it, or we'd ruin it. We've all committed, indeed, the ultimate crime in the universe. We've turned our backs on Jesus, the one who wants to give us this wonderful new world. We've ignored him and lived life without him, even though he has given us so much and even though we owe our very lives to him. And for that, we will be excluded from this wonderful new creation. It is devastating news. It's as if this wonderful world that we all want is tantalizingly close and we can almost reach out and touch it, and then it's snatched away. Well, it's snatched away until we understand that when Jesus lived among us 2,000 years ago, he not only gave us little glimpses of the new creation, but far more importantly, he came to deal with our problem and to make it possible for us to be part of the new creation. And he did that by dying on a cross. Well, my time has gone. I don't have time to explain how Jesus' death dealt with that problem. So let me end by asking you very simply, do you want to enjoy living in this new creation for eternity? And let me end by saying there's only one person who can deliver on the promise, and that's Jesus. But I don't expect you, particularly if you've never been here before and never thought of these things before, and we're so thrilled you've come, I don't expect you to accept all this without investigating further. But we're saying today, will you at least look into these things? Wouldn't it be the greatest tragedy of all time if you, for the sake of a little bit of time, didn't give some time in time to these things and then missed out on eternity? Wouldn't that be tragic? And so we're saying, will you at least give it some thought? At least investigate whether this might be true and whether this Jesus can be trusted. See, many of us here who are committed Christians have a dream that's reality, we believe, and we'd love you to have it too.